Bill Simmons hosts the most downloaded sports podcast of all time with a rotating crew of celebrities, athletes, media staples, and a slew of other friends and family members who always happen to be available. Check out the Bill Simmons podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Iron Flank.
The iron brew flank.
Is that
the iron brew flank, bro?
Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House on Ringer SC. Hope you're staying safe and well. Today, we're going to talk England and Scotland's draw at Wembley, Denmark and Belgium, and some other Euros chat, and the anniversary of the great Cruyff turn. And my guests are Mr. Ryan Hun and Musa Kwonga. How are you doing, guys?
All right, thanks, Righty. How are you?
Disappointed, I suppose. I think, you know, I felt like a hype man yesterday because...
Right.
And the only reason why I felt like a hype man going into it, we weren't like... electrifying against Croatia. Mm. And, you know, I mean, there's so much room for improvement, but what you're going into it, and what I do is I'm going off of what I believe the players are capable of doing.
Right.
And so even the team he picked yesterday, I'm thinking, yeah, but I'm not expecting the players to play as poorly as they did. And like people say, yeah, but what about Scotland shutting them down? Yes, Scotland did shut them down, but the way you're able to shut a team down, because don't tell me when the game starts, right? When you're getting ready for the game, when they see the team, that every single one of those Scottish players are thinking about having to do the very, very best. You heard Graham Souness say it. Mm. We're going to have to be our very, very best. We'll play our best game to beat them, because what the Scotland players will be thinking in the dressing, what I thought when you're playing against a team with good individuals, good, is that you're afraid of what the best thing that they can do. So I always go off of my punditry when I'm talking about the best that that person will actually perform. Do you understand?
Mm.
So when you go out and then that team doesn't, it's like a boxer who's got a knockout punch, guys. When he hits you with that first one, which is really clean, and he caught you and you don't go down, you don't shake. All of a sudden you say, whoa, I'm kind of not afraid of you lot now.
Yeah.
Scotland were excellent.
Yeah, tactically. I thought the same. It was like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, right? It was like, I thought Scotland were really good. Like there was, I think you highlighted it on ITV, the Tierney overlapping in the first half.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And like the ground that he covers for that, considering he missed the first game through injury, the ground that he covers for that one example that they used in the amount of time that he does it, was absolutely mesmerizing. Scotland were good and more than deserved the point, I think.
I think Scotland deserved to win.
If they had won, I think it would. I don't think it would have been a massive smash and grab.
No, it wouldn't have been at all.
But I think the from the England side, because the expectation is so high, they would have looked at this as like, obviously they think they should win every single game in the group. I mean, the way that the group stages, the way that it will pan out, I think just getting out of the group in the Euros is the main thing anyway.
How do you feel if you're an England player this morning, right? How do you feel, Moose? Because I know how I'd feel.
I think the problem is minutes. You have to be battle tested in a tournament going to later stages. There's just a concern, I would say, about minutes and rotation. I really liked the England team as set out, the starting team. I think it was fair to start with the same players again, well, with the exception of the fullbacks. And I just think that it's about adjustments. This is the thing. We talk about the final 15% that elevates a tournament-winning coach from everyone else. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, Harry Kane is not really, he's not playing with the energy that peak Harry Kane plays with, and that's understandable. Some of the tactical changes are a little strange. And I also think that going into the late stages of the tournament, you need to give more players a chance to get used to playing in tournament environments. I'm not even that critical of the result, to be honest, because the moment I saw Scotland's left flank, I was like, I love this so much. When I saw Scotland's midfield and I saw Gilmore there, I was like, I absolutely love this. They're going to go toe-to-toe. That's a brave midfield to pick.
Two up front, yeah.
And I thought to myself, you then have to expose Scotland's weaker flank, which was the other flank. And they didn't attack it aggressively. They didn't really go after it. And they had opportunities. And I know that Sterling scored in the first game and scored the winner. But he's somebody who I think I would have thought of changing.
Maybe changing, yeah.
And I also completely understand and respect the decision to keep the same midfield they had. But I think that there was an opportunity to go with a different midfielder. So they could have sacrificed one of the defensive midfielders, either one of them, for someone like a Bellingham to drive into those spaces.
Yeah. Yep.
And if we're being really, really hot take, they could have maybe thought about doing something different with Kane.
Yeah, I mean, I think this might, sorry to jump in, but I think this might, I was thinking about what to do for the Czech Republic game. I wouldn't be disappointed at all if someone like Dominic Calvert-Lewin starts that game. And I know that sounds a little bit like, what?
No, that's fair, that's fair.
If you think about what England lacked against Scotland, and I'd like to kind of focus on Scotland a bit in a minute, but for now, yeah, we'll see the England stuff. The kind of speed of building the play in an attacking sense and fluidity.
Yeah.
I think I tweeted with about a quarter of an hour to go that, you know, with this game state as it is, Jadon Sancho should be on this football pitch.
Absolutely.
Looking ahead to the Czech Republic game, seeing how they've played in their opening two games, if you experimented a little bit with the mobility that Dominic Calvert-Lewin brings, that will be the game to do it before the knockout.
Yes.
Do you feel that he's somebody that, because he does, he'll run channels. Because like yesterday, there was time where England players in the midfield had time on the ball. Scotland's line was quite high. And Harry Kane didn't make the runs into those channels to then stretch their team at all. What Dominic Calvert-Lewin will do, he will at least threaten and do that. But then if you're going to play him, then you have to play Grealish or Foden in that creative role and the space that he's going to vacate. Because yesterday I thought like Harry Kane was coming into areas where he's just condensing everything even more. It wasn't working. Handley went with him. And Handley went as far as he went, just following him, because he's not going to turn you. There's no one really apart from Foden. I was disappointed at Foden come. I'm really disappointed. Because a player like that, even when he's playing badly, still shows to the ball, still tries to do those things in the last third that you need, that creative, brave player who still wants the ball, still wants to turn it around the corner first time, link play, one twos, and he took him off. Reece James, I'm thinking, okay, Reece James to pin back this fucking Scottish left side because it's so potent, it's so dangerous. And then you've got Billy Gilmore in there just looking, just as the game went by, like with the Liverpool game, he just grew and grew more into the game. But was Reece James supposed to get forward to put crosses in? You know, when Phil Foden goes inside, was he meant to be doing it? Because I didn't see it very often last night.
I think
night.
He was there more. I actually took it. He was more there for the recovery aspect. Because if you saw how he played in the Champions League final, obviously, one of his greatest strengths is that he can cover astonishing ground when people try to get him behind at least once or twice. So I thought he was there, weirdly enough, because of his defensive intensity, because he's so good at tracking. I don't think he was there to cut beyond, because frankly, that's one of the best left back. That's one of the best left flanks defensively in world football. That sounds a bit dramatic, but it's unbelievably solid.
Yeah, Tierney and Robertson.
It's amazing, right? It's amazing. It's like the iron bank, like you can't, the iron brew flank.
Is
that the iron brew flank, bro?
Honestly, I saw that team before kickoff, and I was like, I absolutely love what Clark has done.
Well, I think the thing is with the England Scotland thing, obviously. What, Scotland are the third lowest ranked team in the tournament. Is that correct? Is that right? I think they are third lowest.
We're 40 behind us, they are.
But also, it's just like a derby. I know that sounds massively cliche, but how many Premier League derbies have we seen between teams that are opposite ends of the table? It's a massive cliche, but it, It does add a different element to it because
who know each other's games.
Well, yeah, and also it's way more loaded. So I think that if this was someone like a, for argument's sake, let's say North Macedonia, I would be way more worried about exactly the same set of circumstances that happened in this game if it had been against someone like North Macedonia.
Completely agree. Yes,
no real relationship in terms of football and thing. No added rivalry. No loaded kind of all of the shit that's been going on recently in the UK. Also because I think that England will get out of the group and they'll probably progress past the round of 16. And that's kind of par, I think, for England. Yeah. Quarterfinals is par, I think.
Mm. Yeah, but right, after the first game, and I have to say with Scotland, because when you watch them, you know where their danger is, which is the left side. But then you throw into the mix, you're giving a 20-year-old his debut and he plays like that. So now, all of a sudden, you could throw into the mix what arguably the best left side in world football.
Yeah.
And a midfielder that is fearless, who can link play and play it just like so easily. It's like when we watched, you can see now, when you watched him, Billy Gilmore, make his debut against Liverpool and he just like fucking took the piss out of Fabinho and all of them in there. And then you put him, you think to yourself, I'm quite afraid now because Scotland's pieces are starting to fit. Now, if they had could you imagine if they had Patrick Bamford or if they had the way Che Adams played yesterday, he looked frightening. He's dropping into holes, whether he was linked up with, whether he pushed it, got his back into defenders or whether he came off, no one dealt with him very well last night. And the only thing that was missing from him last night for him to have that kind of game where people say, fucking hell, was a goal.
Yes.
If he scores a goal, people say, hang on a minute, he's got a lot more because people won't notice Che Adams is what he does because he's at Southampton, he's in and out of the team. He's not like a prolific, consistent goal scorer, but everything he does it pretty well. And now that he's done what he done last night in that game, people say, hang on a minute, he's a lot better than pretty well, actually.
Yes.
If he finished clinically, you're now looking at someone, you think, fuck, he's really good.
Yeah. The far post one was difficult, one he had late on that he put over the bar. That was a very difficult angle. That's one of those ones that you catch it. If you have your shoulder, your right shoulder over it and you have your head down and your laces, you had to have a shoulder over it. And I saw that and I was like, he's not going to get over that.
Well, obviously I think like XG wise, for example, England had the better of Scotland. But I think in terms of kind of one of those like, moments in the first half. Like England didn't have a shot on target, right? First half.
The header on the post, I suppose. Stones. That was a Stones effort.
It's not on target though, Moussa.
Yeah.
What I will say with that header as well, that was a superb header actually in terms of what he did for his angling. I think that was, a lot of people like, he should have scored. That's like, no, actually.
I thought he got up, he was heading it on the way down.
And he got back and across as well. He got his head back and across. I think that was pretty
good. I said that if anything.
I know you're going to say.
For me, Clive. He jumped too well.
He got it too well. I knew it. Whenever you hear, if anything, you know what's coming next. You know the like record.
Roy Keane could believe it. Roy Keane, I love Grumpy Keane. I love him so Grumpy much. Keane's it's great, just like, you know, you and Souness are trying to do the like, well, yeah, I mean, he's got, it's just like, Keane's just like.
Has to score.
He's got to time his run. He's got to time his jump. He's just got to score. England were dreadful. And then he moves on to another point and it's just like, whoa, hold up. You know, when he lets the beard go, it's like Keane unleashed.
Keane unleashed.
Oh, actually, before I forget, Keane on a unleashed. Badly timed run, Kane's header actually, first half. That was a funny one. That was a strangely badly timed. And that was just not to like dwell on it too much, but it was very much about the angle of run, isn't it? There's a sharpness thing. It's interesting. I remember if you think about sort of peak Fernando Torres, and the thing that always struck me was, do you remember how peak Fernando Torres always attacked the near post? To a point where it was almost frightening. Like this man's not afraid of cracking his skull on the near post. Like he would just tear for it. The moment the winger got the ball, Torres would cut and he would not necessarily care who was in the way.
Yeah, the timing it was
like,
as well.
This man could run naked through a thicket of like thorns. You know, he was the way he cut it. But and it's that, when I saw Kane with that header, I was like, and as you see the whole performance, like this is almost like, it's like when you're just a half step off.
Yeah, this is why I think we're talking about the Dominic Calvert-Lewin thing because you said it in the last podcast when we talked about England about how there's a squad there for a reason and the tournament is long. If you take Kane out just to give him a bit of a rest, even because that turns it into what, a week a week's rest, which is integral at this part of the tournament.
I would like Ryan for him to take him off, bring on Calvert-Lewin, change a couple of things around to see if we have to progress further without him for whatever reason. Mm. You know, then see how we play.
Yeah, because I think also with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, it's just it's kind of like the Billy Gilmore aspect of the Scotland game, where Dominic Calvert-Lewin playing up front for England in a major tournament, you're going to get a little bit extra because it's not something that he would expect really at the moment.
I would say one other thing though about goal scorers, I think, funnily enough, you bring in a Calvert-Lewin and then all kinds of other spaces open up. And don't forget, everyone in those front lines can finish. This is the thing. Mm-hmm. Everyone.
Mm. Well, yeah, you've got Foden and Sterling who have played in false nine systems all season.
Mm. Absolutely. Mm. They can finish, absolutely. Sancho, if he comes to the bench, can finish. There's no shortage of goals in that team if spaces open up. Mm. This is the thing.
I think I'm so desperate to see his next team get Ryan.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I actually think the major thing that he needs to think about is midfield. Because I think the problem that England have got at the moment is that the transition from defence to attack is just way too slow. It was like when you used to take Cazorla out of the Arsenal side and all of a sudden everything would just shut down and you'd be like, like, what's going on? It's like sticking a speed bump in the road. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look at what Scotland did yesterday, I think this is actually the really smart thing they did. I thought their midfield selection was like bang on.
Brilliant.
And I think that I think that's the thing that I'm most disappointed in Gareth Southgate in. And I get that this is a weird tournament and managing it is tricky for anyone. But I think that was the thing that I found too conservative, that midfield. I really think that if you'd had someone like a Bellingham in there who is a physical presence, but has the technical ability and the bite, I think him and Gilmore, for example, would have gone up against each other and it would have been amazing. But also, something that he's done really well this season is provided this kind of transition between defence and the forward line for Dortmund. I personally, obviously we have the benefit of having watched the game in hindsight, but I personally would have loved to have seen maybe just Rice or Phillips with Bellingham and Mount as 2-8s around them. If you're not going to play the back three, I don't think you need two midfielders of the profile.
Two pivots.
Yeah, I don't think you need that. And I think in a congested midfield against Scotland, you really need people who are going to kind of like get you out of trouble.
Stadio, here's the keys. Go and do your stuff.
Well, this is why I think the Czech Republic game is perfect for that.
Actually. Well, also hot take as well. 4 points in the first two games, you would take that. You would take that starting at the start of the tournament, you take it.
Ain't that bad. Mm. Just a quick point.
Yeah.
Who won it in 2016? Portugal won, right? Their first three games, 1-1 with Iceland, 0-0 with Austria, 3-0 with Hungary.
France, 0-0 draw with Denmark is one of the poorest performances I've seen at a major tournament from a team that ends up going to win.
But you can see
they're ironing out the kinks. Yeah. You know, they had Thomas Lemar starting there. They moved him out and Nzonzi Kanté didn't quite work.
Yeah.
They didn't really use that again. Mm. And you saw, you know, it's like when Spain lost to Switzerland first game of the World Cup and they rejigged everything. I think they worked out the double pivot and then they were away. But so you have these...
It's going to be interesting to see what we do.
It's going to be interesting to see what Scotland do against Croatia, because if they really exactly go for Croatia,
they
could get out of the group.
Let's be real, they should have beaten the Czech Republic. They should have beaten the Czech Republic. Someone has to say it. They should have beaten them with better finishing. Yeah. So that's what it is. Anyway.
I think England will be fine. I think they'll get to the quarterfinals minimum. I think they will get better. I hope Scotland get out of the group as well, because that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, hey. Good point.
Well done, Scotland.
Good point.
Absolutely.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do you know what it is today? Apart from being Saturday, it's the 47th anniversary of the Cruyff turn.
Oh my God! So that flashed up. I saw that tweet because Roscoe said, it's really weird because he said, do you remember this? I fucking remember it. This is life changing stuff. I literally didn't watch the end of the match. Just went outside to just try and do the Cruyff turn.
This is what I said. I mean, I posted the video on Twitter and I was saying, like, the fact that it's still so mesmerizing now.
It's the defender.
I cannot believe what it would have been like watching it live.
Can you imagine if they had Twitter?
When a new move comes out. For the Cruyff turn.
Can you imagine the tweets? New Cruyff just dropped. Can you imagine?
Yeah, you know the thing is,
it's like Cruyff has just ended Olsen's career.
With the Cruyff turn, because like I said, it was 74, I was watching it live and we couldn't wait to go downstairs to practice it. And I was very fortunate. I got invited to a UEFA kind of golf day thing and it was obviously Platini was there, Cruyff was there, Gullit, Van Basten. It had everybody there and I ended up on Johan Cruyff's table. Next to him, talking for hours. And he was talking about coaching. And do you want to coach? I said, yeah, but the badges. He said, he kind of said, F the badges, man. You know, said F the badges, man. Coach from upstairs. You can see it's better from up there as well. You don't need to be on the sideline. What's the sideline for? You know, he was saying this sort of stuff.
Such a rebel.
The most Cruyff thing ever.
Honestly, I remember him saying, and I heard him do it in interviews afterwards as well. And before. I never ever done that before. I'd never done that trick before, not in training. He says, as it happened, and this is obviously his genius, as it happened, he came this way. He kind of got a glimpse of the guy and he just went that way. It was, you know, and some, you look at the move and the move is so simple for everybody. Why? And the way he done it, it was genius. And you look at it, you think, wow, why couldn't I think of that?
Because it doesn't make sense. That's the genius of it. It doesn't make sense. There's a thing that Alexander Isak does when he's attacking goal when Slovakia plays Sweden, right? Mm. He makes this brilliant run from the halfway line. About halfway through the run, he throws his body back towards his own goal and the defender goes with him and then he goes the other direction towards goal. And it makes no sense. That's why the Cruyff turn is genius, because it's not meant to happen. Because when your body is shaped like that, you're cutting back inside the defender. You're not going to go outside him. It doesn't make sense. This is the genius of it.
He's defying physics.
That's why it's so amazing. I've looked at it so many times and go, why is the Cruyff turn? Why is it genius? Why does it? It's like when you see a defender, a midfielder does a thing where he runs towards the ball and the defender comes towards him and then he lets it run through his legs, steps over with his right and then goes right again. You're not meant to let the ball go. It's like when Pele went around the keeper. You're not meant to let the ball go.
I was just gonna mention that, yeah.
You're not meant to like part company with the ball. It's the most counterintuitive thing in football. It's genius.
I think shout outs to my mate, Ed Kilvert. I think he said something, we were talking about the Cruyff turn once on Twitter and he said something that was just like, there's never been a more perfectly executed one than the first one. What even is that?
It's the Cruyff turn.
It's like Hendrick's Isle of Wight shit.
It is.
It's just, you know, like, it is. You'll never...
Can I tell
you?
No, it was like, I tell you what it was. It was like watching Michael Jackson at Wembley when he's done the scream and the rocket just appeared out the stage. And then Michael Jackson kicked the door off and he was standing there. You go to a concert and you know when you just see people, they pan to the crowd and you just see people just fucking just screaming, uncontrollably screaming. As soon as the rocket came and he kicked it off and I realized, I started screaming. I literally started screaming like all those people who were just looking at them, just screaming, holding their heads. When I saw the Cruyff turn, first time in my life, and then I saw Michael Jackson kick the door off at Wembley to do Scream. It was the same. I saw something that was out of this worldly. I was so fortunate.
I know what you mean, because it's like it's a moment where you're like, that has never happened before. There's two things you think. First, that's never happened before. And then you're like, everything has changed.
Yeah.
Everything has changed.
You always drop that Avengers line when Captain Marvel comes up and they're just like, something's entered the upper realm. Talk about a dude who should be arrested for crimes against the sacred timeline.
Yeah, the sacred timeline.
Johan Cruyff fucked everything up. Yes, he fucked everything up.
That's what they should have called Loki. They should have called him Loki. They should have called him Cruyff. I'm so pleased that you mentioned that, Ryan, because again, Cruyff, when people talk about, as time's going by, people talking about the greats, and then obviously going to add Ronaldo and Messi to the real, real greats. I still believe that Cruyff's name doesn't get enough.
No, he's my favourite player of all time, which is weird because I wasn't alive when he was at his peak at all. I don't think I was alive at all when he was playing. I think he retired in 84.
I think players like Cruyff exist in a different category, to be honest. You know, like Marvel, I think he's like Kevin Feige. I think he's producing every... I think Cruyff, because if you think what Cruyff did, Cruyff was football. A lot of people were footballers, but Cruyff was football in the sense of the like, not just an astonishing player, but an architect, like more like an executive producer in terms of like, he acted, he directed, he wrote, he cast. Do you know what I mean? Like footballers, you know, Pele, I love these. They just played, right? They're amazing, yeah. But they just played. Cruyff put systems and structures together for other people to continue doing what Cruyff was doing long after he would be there. So football is basically the Cruyff extended universe. That's it. That's it.
Anyway, 47th anniversary today.
I love that you mentioned that. I love that.
I miss that man, man. I never met the guy, but like, I swear, like if you've read My Turn, right?
Yeah.
The Cruyff book, where it's like a paragraph on the Cruyff turn about three paragraphs on the three European Cups in a row. Yeah. And then there's like 25 pages on what the fuck is wrong with Ajax.
The one thing about Cruyff I would say is amazing about him is he's one person. He's like Larry Bird was in basketball. You know, like some people. Really,
now you're talking.
They're the best great players of all time. Mm. Larry Bird's one of the greatest executives of all time and coaches. You know, you could put him in like, Cruyff belongs. He's one of probably the only footballer that belongs in all three of those rooms. You know, greatest wow. coaches, greatest executives, greatest that like footballers.
Can we talk about
Lukaku?
Lukaku and Belgium. Can I say something on Lukaku and Belgium before? Obviously, Belgium coming from behind to beat Denmark 2-1 the other day. Mm. I know we talk about Romelu a lot.
I love the Rom.
He's elevated himself over the last year. And actually, I really think in the last few weeks, even more so, his behavior after the Belgium-Denmark game, or the Denmark-Belgium game, I should say, he's in the untouchable territory at the moment, I think. Mm. He's an untouchable, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Personally. What he's doing is very special. I was actually talking to Connor about this as a piece I'll be doing for The Ringer about. And I was like, the journey that Lukaku is on, these first two games, has a centre forward ever been on more of a journey in the first two games of a tournament? We're playing like the Euros in different countries. Mm. He goes to Russia, gets booed, scores within 10 minutes for his friend, scores again. Puts every racist in that crowd to sleep, and that he's still living rent free. Mm. Probably living in a thousand. He's still living in 1,000 apartments right now in Russia. Multiple dartboards of Lukaku's face on them. Then he goes to Copenhagen, complete different context, where he's surrounded by love, respect for him, which can be overwhelming. Yeah. Goes into that context. His name is chanted by Denmark fans because they know how much he loves Eriksen, how public he was about it, how he prioritized that. In the game, in Russia, in the middle of all of that, to prioritize Eriksson's well-being there and in the interview. So overwhelmed, he could have been overwhelmed by racism. He wasn't. Yeah. Would have been human to be that. Could have been overwhelmed by emotion. Mm. Completely human. He wasn't that. And in both games, elevated his play to a level that was truly elite.
You know, you know when you watched it, Moose, when you watched the games, of course, De Bruyne got all the headlines. The two goals do not happen without what he does.
The way he broke.
You cannot ignore his contribution because Lukaku, especially for the first goal, he got the ball. He literally ran in, out, coming out, back. He went down towards the goal line with players chasing him, come around back to the sideline, beat two players, got once, played it in, then De Bruyne plays it across, then they score. And the same with the second goal, with the work, what he does. And what's frustrating about that is that that must be recognized.
I would agree with that. And what I would say as well, like what I want to reference is Belgium-Brazil. See how Lukaku played as a winger in the 2018 World Cup and was a foil for De Bruyne. It was exactly the same energy in this match. I was like, oh my God, I've seen this performance before. It's Belgium-Brazil. Where Lukaku was basically out on the flank because that's the thing I love about him as a nine. He runs the channels, old school. Yeah. He goes from in to out.
and but vacate
there's definitely
space.
When he makes the space, people always feel it. That's why he can run, come round, take on two players, and you know that when he passes it into De Bruyne, there's people there, whether it's Dries Mertens, whoever it's going to be, someone's going to be in there.
Crashing the box.
Yeah. And that's what we don't do, unfortunately.
I think, but actually that's really interesting you said that, right? Because I was going to say that Belgium are kind of an example of what you would like England to be in terms of they are still getting key players back from injury. You know, De Bruyne, Eden Hazard came on, obviously. Torgan started the game.
Tielemans just doing his stuff. See, like you talk about, okay, the group stages, nothing's done in the group stage, just got to get out. But when I'm looking at Belgium, especially with the first game, they beat them. And who was it they beat in the very first game? Russia, right? Yeah. They hammered them. Russia were terrible. But they beat them because they were better than them and Russia didn't give them the kind of pressure or put them under the kind of pressure I thought they was going to do, especially when they didn't have De Bruyne and a Hazard to help create. But in the end, Lukaku came up with the goods. So they were good in that one. They got better in the second one. And they're getting better and the players are coming back. So if I'm Belgian, I'm starting to feel a little bit like, yes, I can feel the momentum.
Yes.
Even though they're the number one ranked team in the world, because of the injuries and maybe they're such a strange side, Belgium, because they have like one or two very identifiable parts of the team that if they improved on, they'd be dynamite. But not a lot of people were talking about them winning it. And I wonder if maybe could we have had a very unique scenario where the number one team in the world should have actually been the dark horses for the tournament. Because everyone's dark horse Turkey has just failed, man.
They're ghosts. Yeah, but I think that because even when they beat Russia without De Bruyne, without Hazard, there was nothing thrilling about that win, and Russia were poor and they didn't have those two main guys. And it wasn't like, wow, zip, 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 pinball football. You just think everybody's kind of ignoring them because I think France are very shiny and sparkly. Because when France played, they just looked like, hang on a minute, we could go to another couple of gears. And where Belgium, they just beat a very poor Russia quite easily. This is why, and I'm trying to make the point, Rai, of saying people, because it's not been like outstanding, unbelievable football for them to get where they're getting, mentally, I think that they're well ahead of it. They're probably thinking to themselves, yeah, we should be ranked as winning this, but the fact that we're dark horses, even better. Because when you watch them, they're just getting slicker and slicker.
I fancied Lukaku for Golden Boot, and I said that prior to the tournament, but I just kind of felt Belgium would go out in the later stages in a kind of, you know what it is? It's that I just can't turn away from the France-Belgium semi-final in 2018, where Belgium really showed something and Hazard was astonishing, even in that game. I mean, Hazard was on fire the entire tournament. But France just had that way to snuff it out. And this was my thing. It's not that I don't think Belgium could go deep. I think they can. But I think that, you know, France and Portugal, to a certain extent, I will say Portugal, I'm surprised by pleasantly because they're playing with a higher speed than I thought they would. Not intensity, but speed. So Portugal were like quicker than I thought.
I saw some things in the Portugal game what made me think, right, this team's going to be ready soon because
even
when you're looking at the chances that they didn't take and in the end they still beat them comfortably, it's the way Diogo Jota, Cristiano Ronaldo was free. He didn't pass to him.
Someone needs to put a wing mirror on Jota. Yeah, like on your left, like in the Marvel. On your left.
To the left.
Can I say, Kevin De Bruyne's finish against Denmark is so elite, right?
That
people
say, levels.
He shouldn't even be hitting it. Because let's face it, it's his near post, right? But there's some... Kasper Schmeichel, he's obviously expecting maybe the one that's going to go across him. Because when you look at the amount of space that's there, how he's hit it, but he's hit it so purely, Kasper Schmeichel can't get nowhere near it. And I'm thinking to myself, how's he beat him there? You look at the strike, it's pure. Goalkeeper's taking a chance, and he's thinking, right, is he going to cross me? Because that's what you're taught, go across the goalie. But when you're De Bruyne, when you're those players, you do what you want. And the half a yard what he left there, and when you look at how much space that ball went into the near post, it didn't go right close to the post, and you think, oh, goalkeeper. it went in the goal at a place in the goal where when you watch it again, you think, should he be beaten there? When you look at how far De Bruyne was, it's we're talking
about almost, he basically almost gives them the eyes from 20 yards.
It's the angle
from 20
from
yards.
It was the same energy. Like if you'd just taken everything and moved De Bruyne to the 6 yard box, it was exact. Everything was exactly the same as what you would do on the 6 yard box.
Yeah,
on just outside the 6 yard box. It was unbelievable.
The strike was pure. Right when you watch it, watch the ball and everything. It's like it's beautiful.
Dude, it's like you know when sometimes there are goals that people hit and you just, you know, obviously we all love music, right? So you just like, you know when like beats drop at the beginning, people are just like, yeah. Like when De Bruyne hit that, he went,
you know, yeah.
Because like when you play golf and you hit the ball, whatever level of golfer you are, you hit the ball and it comes out the sweet spot. You don't feel anything, but in yourself, you know, that was perfectly hit. That is exactly what happened with De Bruyne's strike, to the point where like the goalkeeper, he couldn't do anything. It's not meant to beat him there. He's not meant to hit a ball that cleanly coming at him first time where he hit. That's the ability that he has. That's his gift.
I love it.
Just quickly on Denmark though as well. They played really well this game. I cannot remember a game like this in terms of the actual quality of the game itself, because I thought it was brilliant.
Mm.
Both teams played really, really well. The goals were great.
Yeah.
The atmosphere was amazing, and the camaraderie and sportsmanship. It sounds really cheesy, but it's like, yeah, this is why we love it.
Wholesome. Wholesome.
Yeah, I can't actually remember a game like it personally.
The amount of lasting friendships that are going to come as a result of that game.
Mm.
Between fans walking up to the game, having a drink afterwards, standing around, because there's something about the way those teams are connected. Obviously, a lot of them knew Ericsson from the Belgium side.
Yeah.
There's a lot of love and respect there. I just thought that summer will be really symbolic, I think, for a lot of people. It'll be like a summer, I met so-and-so, I met my best mate there, whatever. It'll be one of those things where you felt the energy was just absolutely unique.
Mm. And it's, again, it's one of those moments that we're all watching. And we've done it, we already covered it, but it's one of those moments you're watching where football brings it so into playing, right into where it needs to be so quickly.
Right.
And gives things perspective and makes you realize, because you cannot think of anything but, boy, this, as great as this game is, we've got to remember it is a game. There's so much more going on. And I love the fact that everybody it's resonated with everybody, how precious life is.
And Christian Eriksen's been discharged from hospital.
He's discharged,
which is like the best news of the Euros.
Easily. We should mention Italy, guys.
They're looking good, man.
The way that they started is like, again, that's how you want to start.
That goal.
Can we just give a big shout out for Ciro Immobile doing the most Italian moment of all time?
Oh my God, yes.
The
double grip. He's gone with both.
It was brilliant.
There's actually been in for the tournament so far, there have been the one consistent thing, I think, there have been some unbelievable goals.
The ratio of incredible goals to goals is astonishing. This is the thing, because there haven't been that many goals, right?
No. Before you kick us out, right? Because Musa's probably going to a lake or something today.
I love that.
And whilst, you know, someone's got it. Well, Musa, I hope you enjoy it, because someone's got to edit this.
Nice.
I'm good. No, I'll away.
Are you angry at me?
No, Moose, what are you going to do just quickly? Because it sounds like whatever it is, it's going to be epic.
It's not for the timeline.
Strictly for the WhatsApp.
Exactly.
It's for the WhatsApp.
I was just going to say, what are we looking forward to? I'm looking forward to how the Italy story ends, you know?
Yeah. Ends. Wow.
Well, I think does it end in the final? Does it end before?
I think you've got to have them in and amongst it. They don't concede. And then what happens is that they don't concede. So instantly as a forward, as a midfielder, you know, if we do our bit, it's going to take a team, a fucking lot to breach this lot. Your confidence as a forward
goes to another level simply because, you know, even if I miss one and I get another one, I know that they're going to keep things out.
Yes.
The confidence that's being built is for an Italian side that we know are just so resolute. They will, it's over their dead body that they will let someone score against them. And
right.
If they can then start scoring, I don't care who you are.
They got big 2006 energy as well. Because don't forget, they only had Gilardino there that was really scoring at that point, but they found goals elsewhere.
I love Italy. I love everything about them. I love their suits. Look how cool he looks. He got an Enzo Berzot vibe about him. Way back
wow,
Enzo
Berzot. That's a deep cut. That's a deep cut.
1982. Now we're talking about handsome men. Can we go to the most handsome man I've ever seen and no one's ever got near him? And this is when I saw him when I was younger. Cabrini, left back, Italy.
Wow.
Stunningly good looking. You've got to do a pod, the good looking podcast.
Handsome 11.
We're looking forward to Italy. Who else are we looking forward to? At the moment, because everyone's played now, right? Last time we'd spoken, no, not everyone had played, right?
Portugal, I'm looking forward to as well. Yeah,
I mean, France, Portugal, well, Portugal, Germany tonight.
Yeah, we're calling this ahead of Portugal, Germany, which I think is going to be a massive game.
I'm looking forward to that a lot.
This is going to tell us a lot, I think, though.
Yeah.
You know what was frightening is watching how Ronaldo played, watching how they could have, because they could have absolutely decimated Hungary, Portugal. Watching how he just came to life at the latter stages, and the goal what he scored where he done the 1-2 was literally him look when he was 25. He looked as sharp as when he was 25, and we're talking about group stages.
He looks sharper now than he did at 2016.
Yes. And what that says to me in the first couple of games is that he's only going to ramp it up.
Right.
He's only going to ramp it up.
They look dangerous.
Okay, guys. Can I say thanks for coming to the yard? Right,
always
his house.
A pleasure.
Thanks for having us, man.
I'll see you later, Moose. Whatever you're doing, have fun doing it because obviously it's none of our business. But I just want you to have fun and think of me. Ryan, whatever you're doing. Think of me, Moose. Right, I'll speak to you soon.
Much love, man. Thanks for having me.
I love you, man. I love you.
Love you too.
Moose, I'll speak to you soon. I love you.
Absolutely, man. Much love.
Okay, so thanks to my guests, Ryan Hunt and Moose Okwonga. We'll be back soon with more Righty's House. Hopefully, I'll be a lot happier than I feel at the moment. But we're still in it. Why am I feeling like this? Because of my expectations. I've got to lower them again. And I'll see you next time, everybody.